Welcome to Studio Tulsa on Health. I'm John Schumann, sitting in for Rich Fisher. Community health is a long-standing concept with its roots in the disciplines of public health and epidemiology. During the 1960s, the Office of Economic Opportunity established a demonstration program which funded neighborhood health centers as part of the War on Poverty. The goal of such centers was to provide access to health and social services for medically underserved and disenfranchised populations. Today, there are more than 7,500 community health centers spread across all 50 states, and collectively they care for more than 16 million low-income and uninsured people. Here in Tulsa, we're blessed with two federally qualified community health centers, Morton Comprehensive Health Services and Community Health Connection. My guest today, John Silva, is the Chief Executive Officer of Morton. Silva has had a long career in developing, managing, and rescuing financially troubled community health centers across the United States, which gives him a deep understanding of the healthcare needs of communities and how to provide them more access to care. He came to Tulsa in 2010 to help solidify Morton and didn't think he'd stay past a three-month consulting engagement. John Silva is here today as our guest on Studio Tulsa on Health. John Silva, welcome to Studio Tulsa on Health. Tell me about the footprint of Morton. How many patients do you serve? What's your budget?
Morton has 20,000 registered patients. Last year, we provided over 70,000 patient visits, clinical billable visits, but we also provided a total of 146,000 all types of visits, including transportation, pharmacy, WIC services, nursing services. So it's a pretty large operation. We have four full-time locations, three in Tulsa and one in Nuwata, and we've got three part-time locations where we provide services in other parts of Tulsa as well. Our operating budget is about $12 million, and our total staff is about 150 full-time equivalents.
Now, that budget, has that increased just in recent years, or do you think it will be increasing under the Affordable Care Act?
It's increased by about $1 million in the 3 years that I've been at Morton. I believe should the Affordable Care Act decision not to, Oklahoma decision not to accept the expansion of Medicaid, should that be reversed, our total operating budget will probably be somewhere around $15 million. We see about 50% of our patients are uninsured, meaning that they either receive uncompensated care, free care, or more times than less, they're working poor, so they'll qualify for sliding fee scale payments, greatly reduced payments.
And Morton is in the name Comprehensive Health Services, and I know that the definition of to be a federally qualified community health center, you have to provide really an array of services, including
right.
Mental health, dental, case management, and social work.
Case management. We have to provide a whole host of medical primary care services on site. We are eligible or able to either provide ancillary services such as dental, behavioral health, et cetera, either through a contractual relationship with other providers in an area or on site. Typically, it's very difficult to have private providers accept uninsured patients and provide a sliding fee scale. So like for dentists or for behavioral health providers, it's usually easier, if that's the right adjective, to develop the services yourself, because it's almost impossible to develop contractual relationships for the uninsured.
What was it that attracted you to the job at Morton? I understand that you have been at many different community health centers in various parts of the country, and you were brought here as a consultant, you told me before the interview, to help shape things up, to help tighten up the management there, and then you wound up staying in the top job.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. I never envisioned that my wife and I would be living in Tulsa. I came here in the summer of 2010 for 3 months to help the organization hire a new CEO and to work on some organizational and structural issues within the organization. But I've been running health centers across the country for 32 years, and I found that Morton was one of the best positioned primary care organizations I've ever seen. In that, I mean, their facilities were just absolutely beautiful. They were Joint Commission accredited by the Joint Commission on Accreditation of Healthcare Organizations. They had a wonderful transportation system in place, but they were stagnant. They really weren't maximizing their facilities. They weren't maximizing their services. They were as well-positioned an organization as I've seen in 30-some years, but they were like a boat that had lost its engine in the middle of the ocean. The other thing that I noticed while I was first here was between the Beacon communities and the work that David Kendrick and the MyHealth folks were doing with some cutting-edge health information exchange development with Dr. Clancy and Dean Duffy over at OU School of Community Medicine, there was a real sense of opportunity to make changes and potentially to develop a healthcare delivery system that you didn't usually believe would, how do I want to put this, that I'd never seen in place in terms of a potential to really make a difference here. And then you overlay all of that with the George Kaiser Family Foundation and some of the other foundations located in Tulsa like Zarro that are very committed to improving quality of life and healthcare access and education. And it just seemed like Brigadoon to me. It seemed like 20 years ago in this undiscovered area where wonderful, wonderful things were happening. So that's kind of why we stayed.
Take me back to your beginnings in terms of community health. What led you into the field and how have you seen it evolve over three decades?
I accidentally got into healthcare. I went to the College of the Holy Cross in Massachusetts, in Worcester, Massachusetts, intending to be the next governor of Massachusetts at some point in my life. I was working at the State House in Boston after graduation, and I was asked to help a fledgling organization go after one of those newfangled community health center grants out of D.C. So I helped write the grant, and it was funded, and I joke with people that after a national search for a new CEO or their first CEO, I was hired at the princely sum of $10,000 a year to check in patients, clean bathrooms, write bills, write payroll, shovel snow. But I got the bug. And the bug was that this was a unique care of healthcare delivery. The health centers are community owned, which means that they're a 501c3 corporation that must be 51% or more consumer users of the services at the health center. And they're located in underserved, rural, isolated areas or areas that have a huge need for access to healthcare. And while a lot of things have changed around the healthcare system over the last 30 years, the need for community health centers continues to grow. It's interesting that it's the last program out of LBJ's Great Society, out of the Office of Economic Opportunity, that still is in existence today. And it's grown from a experimental program to a multi-billion dollar service delivery across the country with 1,300 community health centers. Now they're called federally qualified health centers, over 8,000 health center locations serving now somewhere around 24 million uninsured or at-risk individuals throughout the United States.
You touched on your origins in community health. You mentioned the Great Society and the War on Poverty. That community health centers are filling a vital need in terms of serving in medically underserved areas, populations that are at risk, not having healthcare access. Here in Tulsa, who are you able to see at Morton?
We see at Morton a cross-section, really, of the city. Morton began as an African-American healthcare organization dating back to 1922, right after the Great Race Riot, as a public hospital. The original Morton was the Moton Hospital, which was a public health hospital targeted for African-Americans. Over the years, Moton has evolved into Morton as a federally qualified health center. And besides a significant population that we see in North Tulsa, African-American and Hispanic, we also see a growing population of Asian residents in East Tulsa, a huge growing population of Hispanic folks in East Tulsa. In rural Nuwata, we see Caucasian, rural, poor population. Our homeless site sees everybody and the cruelty every day of what homelessness can do to individuals and families. I would wager that right now we may be the most diverse primary care organization possibly within the state. Our patient census right now is pretty amazing. It's about 40% African-American, about 30% Hispanic, and about 28%, I hope that all adds up to 98, 28% Caucasian with about 2% Asian, which is pretty amazing. Most of the folks are uninsured. We see a sizable amount of Medicaid a smaller amount of Medicare recipients, and surprisingly, we see a fair percentage of commercially insured folks as well. I think the Joint Commission accreditation and recognition of Morton as a quality health care provider has helped us attract additional patients other than what we typically serve.
So for those not in the know, you provide this vital service to a large percentage of patients that are uninsured and provide them, really, you are the safety net. I mean, everyone talks about the emergency room as a place to go, and these community health centers exist to say, hey, we're open, come and actually get primary care here.
Right, and wherever they're located, John, studies have indicated repeatedly that they improve health outcomes and they reduce utilization in ERs and improve care, driving it away from episodic care and more into a medical home environment. Here in Tulsa and here in Oklahoma generally, federally qualified health centers are kind of still undiscovered. When I said it's 20 years ago and it's like Brigadoon, I was amazed when I came here that there was still some opposition to the idea of federally qualified health centers in Oklahoma, where in reality, with additional partnerships between FQHCs and hospitals, for instance, we could drive down even further the inappropriate use of ERs by moving folks into patient-centered medical home. I mean, it's a great opportunity. There are 18 community health centers in federally qualified health centers in Oklahoma, and there are 44 sites, individual health center locations in Oklahoma. So we have a tremendously underutilized resource in Oklahoma.
How do you spread the word?
You spread the word by doing good work. You spread the word by becoming recognized as a quality healthcare provider. We also need to spread the word by educating our legislators in Oklahoma City that there is another viable option in terms of building and improving a healthcare delivery system, access to healthcare and primary care services with federally qualified health centers. Although in Oklahoma, we have a tendency to be drowned out by the hospitals, there are large hospital systems here, and by other public interests that don't really recognize the possibilities and potential of federally qualified health centers because, quite frankly, they haven't educated themselves on us either.
So I want to ask you the following. You have almost half of your patients with no insurance. You have a sizable portion of your patients that are Medicaid eligible or Medicaid recipients. How do you balance the books?
We are as federally qualified health centers. Federally qualified means that we are qualified to be reimbursed for Medicaid and Medicare services at a prospective payment rate. That rate is basically an annual report that we have to do that tallies our and averages our total costs, both direct and indirect, to providing care for one of our patients. Unlike private group practices, say, for Utica Park or in Broken Arrow or Jenks, the typical issues that our patients present are sometimes very intense, very complex, and they are numerous. A person that may come in with a headache may have malnutrition, may have not seen a doctor forever, may have diabetes, may also have dental issues and mental health issues. So many years ago now, the federal government recognized that the primary care provided at a federally qualified health center is much more expensive because it's much more complex and comprehensive than in a private provider's office. We typically leverage, a good health center will typically leverage the prospective payments that we receive and our other billing with federal grants, state grants, and other reimbursements to try to close the gap between what we can bill and raise and what the cost of healthcare services to that population is. I often tell folks that I'm speaking to that federally qualified health centers, that our industry is one of the only ones that begins the year in a deficit. And without the federal dollars that we receive through federal grants and PPS prospective payment, we wouldn't be able to remain open or provide the services we provide.
I read that in the last presidential administration, that is under George W. Bush, there was a vast expansion of community health centers, that the number of centers went way, way up, and the federal dollars that went into them went way up. And it seemed like a surprise to many commentators. Were you surprised by that?
I wasn't surprised by that. Annually, The federally qualified health center appropriation is usually unanimously adopted within the United States Senate, and usually is adopted in Congress by, 280-2. It's very bipartisan. It's a very bipartisan supported program, simply because on one side it improves access and health outcomes, which may really flip the switch of the Democrats, and on the other side, it is proven to be extraordinarily cost effective, and really reduces the cost of health care. The interesting thing, though, under former President Bush's expansion was on the top, there was a major expansion of health centers. On the bottom, there was a major reduction in Medicaid. So it was like getting it in one hand and having to give it back in the other. Now, as I told you previously, Medicaid and Medicare kind of keep us solvent. So while health centers were increasing in number under President Bush, they were also feeling quite a bit of financial pain because Medicaid accessibility, Medicaid enrollment was reduced.
Across many different states.
And across, especially among many different populations.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa on Health. I'm John Schumann, sitting in for Rich Fisher. My guest today, John Silva, the CEO of Morton Comprehensive Health Services here in Tulsa. We talked a little bit about the politics of community health centers. I read that you served on the task force of Hillary Rodham Clinton back in the Clinton administration when she was looking to create a health care reform act or bill. And, of course, we know the outcome of that, and we know now that President Obama has successfully passed the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare. I wonder what similarities and what differences you see in the two eras or in the two bills. Actually, Hillary Clinton's never came to a bill. But what do you look forward to coming up starting, for example, in 2014 when we see a large enrollment, maybe not in Oklahoma, but in other places?
Well, first, when I was back in the dark ages serving on the Universal Healthcare Task Force, I was the president of the National Association of Community Health Centers, which was my entree into what they call the primary care pod. That we did a lot of really interesting things during that process, but one of the biggest difference between what the Clintons did and what President Obama did is the Clintons, after all the work was done internally, released the report and the recommendations to the private sector first, the associations, the special interest groups. What they released to the public after that bore little resemblance to some of the work, to much of the work that we did. The Obama effort basically took some of Hillary Clinton's, some of that task force work. Surprisingly, they adopted or suggested an awful lot of Republican ideas from the Heritage Foundation, from Ronald Reagan, from a number of folks. And then they wrapped it all up in terms of a plan in a way that they thought would generate bipartisan support. I thought the biggest weakness in Obamacare, as opposed to Hillary's original incarnation, was that there was no public option. And I still think that that's one of the missing links in terms of universal health care or access to affordable health care. There's nothing wrong with a public option to allow some competition with the commercial insurers and to ensure that everybody that needs health care access or folks that maybe want to pay less have that option.
I remember that debate, and I just want to clarify that by public option you mean an available insurance package you could buy from the government that would essentially provide essential services at assuming a minimum price. And
right.
It was really the lobbying of the health insurance industry that really wanted a sort of a minimum floor so that
right.
they could compete with each other, but not with a government subsidized option, as it were.
Right. And if that was the case, we wouldn't be talking about health insurance exchanges. There would be a public option and there would be a basic set of benefits. And I think it would increase competition and reduce some of the overhead that we're paying. I don't think people always understand that whether we have Obamacare or any other care, we're still paying for the cost for the uninsured and access for the uninsured every day through our emergency rooms and through major emergencies that get admitted into our hospitals.
I want to shift gears here and go back to something you mentioned earlier. You said that federally qualified community health centers are 501c3 corporations, that is, they're not-for-profit. They provide community benefit, and that 51% of the it's the board of directors,
yes,
correct, have to be patients served,
yes,
by the center. And I wonder what that's like. I can't think of many other organizations, even in the nonprofit world, that have that type of that stringent of a requirement.
Right.
I mean, and you must have good stories you've accumulated over the years. I know of a community health center that was near the hospital I worked at in Chicago, where there were serious divisions both amongst board members and then in dealing with some of the community partners.
Right. There are no other organizations that have users or customers on their board. We are unique in that way, but I think that's part of our success. Working with a board of directors made up of professionals and then of consumers and users of the organization is pretty dynamic. The consumers keep us honest. They know every day when they walk in what's good and what's bad, and don't worry, I'll hear about it if things aren't working well. But they also have more of a pulse of the community in terms of what services are really necessary, what services are not as necessary, and how our quality of service is. It's dynamic. I've been doing this for a long time. Sometimes there are divisions, but in good health centers, it's that dynamic, if it's done constructively, that keeps you moving forward and keeps you near the pulse of the community that you say that you're serving.
It's interesting. I really relish that aspect of community health centers, and like you say, having customers on the board. I wonder, from your position, having worked in community health your entire career, what other healthcare enterprises have been the most progressive in terms of delivering on the promise of community health betterment? That is it the hospitals? Is it the doctors? Is it community groups or disease-specific advocacy groups, or, you know, all of the above or none of the above, fill in the blank here? Which entities have been the most progressive in, with regard to community health, and maybe why or why not?
It usually depends on the issue. I've worked with hospitals, with some hospital systems that are incredibly progressive and think outside of the box. But an awful lot of times, the larger hospital systems, the larger academic systems get bogged down in bureaucracy and their own budget issues. I find that community-based organizations like federally qualified health centers, some of the local cancer and disease organizations that really, you know, American Cancer, American Heart, American Diabetes, March of Dimes, that can focus all of their efforts on education and outreach work very well. There's been some tremendous success recently with the Komen Foundation in terms of getting the message out in terms of breast cancer and screening and education. The places that I've been that seem to work the best are when all of those organizations maybe get themselves together around one flag or one particular issue. Tulsa is a very difficult place to try to do that because it's a fairly segmented city. Each of the major hospital systems have their populations. There's not an awful lot of participation all the times in the communities and the neighborhoods that we work in. However, there is an awful lot of community activism, a lot of Department of Health. The county, city county Department of Health and the state Department of Health do a great job in education and outreach and training. Some of my frustration sometimes is that we educate folks, we train them, we try to move them into a system of care, and then they find obstacles based upon insurance status in being able to access the care and the providers that we're pushing them, educating them.
Specialty care in particular?
Specialty care is probably the bane of my existence in a federally qualified health center. We have no trouble at all referring commercial patients and Medicare patients to specialty care. We have more difficult problem with Medicaid, and I'm telling you that for our uninsured, it's a constant everyday battle. If somebody is diagnosed with something that needs follow-up care and they're uninsured, we work the phones, we have referral folks, our docs, our providers get on the phone, we do whatever we can, but that part of our national healthcare system is a disgrace. That, and my other little commercial, is in our dental system. Our dental care for adults, especially our dental system, is a disgrace.
I want to ask about something at community health centers that I know has been problematic over the years nationally, which is just the recruitment and retention of particularly doctors, but I suppose also nurses at community health centers? I mean, what have you done or what have you seen to try to recruit and retain bright minds to work in the community health movement?
We try to do an awful lot of teaching. Residents, we try to start with medical students or physician assistant students, dental students, to get them attuned to our system. We try to develop residency relationships with local teaching institutions. In the case of OU, Oklahoma University School of Community Medicine, we have some existing residency relationships that are developing and expanding. But the whole point, the whole effort is to get folks, residents, before they make that determination of what they're going to do when they leave residency, to see primary care, community-based primary care, straight up. For some folks, it's a revelation and it's what they want to do. Then you have a shot at them. Then you've got to have salaries that are competitive. You've got to, as federally qualified health centers, you want to leverage federal loan repayment options where medical residents who want to come to work at a federally qualified health center can qualify for federal loan repayment for the amount of time that they provide services at that location. And you want to make it a place where a provider, a physician, can see themselves over 10 or 20 years. It's a place where you can make tremendous differences and improvements in healthcare, but it takes a special kind of provider. It's a good quality of life, but you know, we're not oncologists and we're not neurosurgeons, and it can be a very interesting population because every day you don't know what's going to walk into that waiting room and what the need is going to be. So it's education, it's trying to stay competitive, it's exposure, and it's just constant recruiting. We're finding that we're having a better time than I remember in recruiting mid-level providers, nurse practitioners and physician assistants. So far, nursing has been okay, but family practice providers and primary care providers are going to get more difficult to recruit over the next 10 years because, quite frankly, there's not enough of them going in and there's not enough of them coming out.
We're almost out of time, but I just wanted to say I've been to the Morton facility, and it is absolutely gorgeous. It's there next to the food bank of Eastern Oklahoma. And do you give tours of the facility?
We will give tours to anybody who wants to come and see the facility. I've been doing what I do for over 30 years. The Morton North Lansing site, built with Vision 2025 money as a result of collaboration between county government, city government, and the residents of Tulsa County, is absolutely the single most beautiful federally qualified health center building I've ever been in. It's a tribute to the commitment that that this community has to providing services to that population.
So get on up to Lansing and Pine in North Tulsa. John Silva, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, John. I really enjoyed it.
John Silva is the Chief Executive Officer of Morton Comprehensive Health Services. Studio Tulsa on Health is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. If you weren't able to catch today's or any of our programs, you can stream audio or hear archive shows at publicradiotulsa.org. The views expressed on this program are those of our guests and do not necessarily reflect those of KWGS or the University of Tulsa. I'm John Schumann, sitting in for Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.